You're listening to Pacifica's Peace Watch. I'm Verna Avery Brown. Poet, peace activist, and spiritual healer Manifest Ra offers a rather unique solution to the impending war in Iraq. Ra asserts that the power of the U.S. and the world resides not with the leaders, but with the people. He visited Peace Watch's studios recently and spoke of the need to organize and shared his works.
Ra means divine light. It's an ancient Egyptian or Kemetic deity of the sun, and it gives a vibrant energy. So Manifest Ra means to enlighten, and Ra also means in ancient Kemetic tradition also God. So it means to bring forth life and all and light, and also to express the attributes of God.
Mm. Mm. So you call yourself a peace activist and a spiritual healer.
Correct.
In these days of impending war with Iraq, how do you see your role?
In this time, it's crucial that all the spiritual healers stand up and be counted. This is more than ever. We need people to come together from all religious backgrounds, ethnic persuasions, racial identifications, and come together as one voice and say to George Bush and the warmongers that there is another way, and that we will use all the power that we have as children of God to elevate the consciousness, shift the consciousness, and bring about world peace. The warmongers are not the power. We are the power.
So what is the other way?
The other way is, and it's interesting that you asked that, because those that are in power in this country have a mindset that it's one way. It's either our way or the highway. And when you have a world where we have over 6 billion people, within that 6 billion people, we have various spiritual traditions, ethnicities, people from all different backgrounds. And it's impossible to preach a doctrine of my way or the highway. We must have an understanding of oneness. Oneness is the correct way, meaning that regardless of who you are, where you come from, your belief system, that you and I are one. We are extensions of one another, meaning that we have to sit down, reason, beyond our cultural differences, our nation, our understanding of our national sovereignties, but come together as one human family and understand that I cannot do harm to you without doing harm to myself.
Now, we rarely, if ever, hear that sort of thinking or consciousness coming out of the mouths of the elected or selected President Bush and his associates and cabinet members in the White House. I mean, and even if you ask the majority of Americans, there's a very much we as Americans, God bless America. Not often do you hear anybody saying God bless America and Iraq and, you know, South Africa. God bless the world. God bless humanity. Mm-hmm. So how do you, as a spiritual healer, propose that we shift that thinking, or you shift that thinking and consciousness to more of a oneness?
Well, first of all, we must understand the times. We have technology that allows us to connect with human beings all across the world, any place in the world, within a matter of seconds. So we're not living in an age where it takes months to communicate with someone over in the Middle East or in Australia. We're living in an instant age where cultural understandings can be passed within seconds. And so in this technologically advanced age, that is a sign, a spiritual sign, that everything is coming together as one. When we can connect it, and we can fly around the world within hours. And so we must understand that it's not all about God bless America. It's about God blessing every human being that's walking this earth. And so we must get rid of the arrogance, meaning that, you know, it's all about America and its prestige and power. And third world nations, so-called third world nations, are just to be subservient to us in our American mindset. And the best way to do that is for people, you like you and me, spiritually oriented people with a conscience, demonstrating on all levels, speaking out as much as possible, getting on all forms of media, whether it be radio, newspaper, or print, and also bringing up the young people. And I must say this, Verna, because as a former teacher in the school system, children don't come out of the womb saying it's my way or the highway. Mm-hmm. Children coming out playing, they come out the womb playing together. They don't care about whether you're black, white, Christian, Muslim, Buddhist, Hindu, or Jew. They come out just expressing unconditional love to one another. And so we have to get in tune with that child aspect of it, that innocent aspect of us as human beings, and really bring that about. And that's the best way to shift the consciousness.
Now, you have used your creative talents and expressions to sort of promote this message of oneness, have you not?
Absolutely.
And I understand you have a poem that you care to share with us, that you plan to share with us this time. What's it called?
It's called "I'm Standing Here with No Clothes On." And it's about human beings getting beyond who we think we really are. We look in the mirror, we say, okay, I'm black, I'm white, or if you ask a human being, who are you? They'll say, I'm a Christian, I'm a Muslim, so forth and so on. But these are the external aspects of who we are. Who are we that fits into the concept of oneness, the infinite part of who we are? Allow me to take off my clothes from my head to my toes so that you can see me as I really am. Not African, Asian, Hispanic, nor European, just define me as a divine human being, striving for oneness with God. See, in the scriptures it says, ye are all God's children of the Most High God. We are microcosms of the macrocosm. But we haven't been able to bring about world peace because we're focusing too much on our clothes. You see, we always cloak ourselves in the garments of religion and race, focusing too much on the complexion of another's face. By the way, what's your faith? Are you Christian, Muslim, Buddhist, Hindu, or Jew? My question is what difference does it really make? These are simply paths to the same destination, oneness with God. You take your path and I take mine, and if we're patient and persevering, we'll all get there in due time. But I don't want you to get crazy in your mind thinking that your path is any better than mine, because the path is not important if we never arrive at the destination, true oneness with God. See, people have been killing each other over race and religion for thousands of years, and it's sad to say that in 2003, the same problem is still here. Killing is going on in Israel and Palestine and India and Pakistan, and as Pharaoh Sanders said, the Creator has a master plan. Peace on earth for every woman and man. But how can we get there if we're killing each other over what we call the Holy Land? And what does that really mean? That 99.9% of the rest of the world is unholy? You see, the way I see it, every sacred inch of Mother Earth is God's creation, not just a few temples and shrines in one particular nation. Then we have some who call themselves the chosen people, as if the rest of us weren't chosen to do anything but eat, sleep, and die. Dear family, we came into this world as babies, naked with no clothing. And at that particular time, religion and race were not things worth knowing, only wanting unconditional love from our moms. You see, family, that's the answer, unconditional universal love. Beyond and above your title, status, class, race, and religion, and anything else you can think of that causes division. See, family, let's take off our illusionary clothes. Maybe, who knows, we'll find world peace.
Manifest Ra. Thank you very much.
Welcome.
I understand you have another poem that you can share with us.
Very short piece.
Okay.
It's called Pieces of Peace. In a time like this, we oftentimes ask ourselves, what can we do? Is the war inevitable? Is it impossible to stop? Well, I would like to say to all the listeners that each and every one of us can be a catalyst, an agent for social change and for peace and compassion. World peace is the answer, but the answer starts with you. World peace is the answer, but the answer starts with you. You see, people out there listening, I want a piece of your peace and your peace and your peace and your peace and your peace. And if we bring all of our pieces together to the table, we can solve the puzzle called world peace. But the answer starts with you. When you break down the word peace, you have P-E-A-C-E, meaning positive energy always creates elevation. Positive energy always creates elevation. Unfortunately, from the White House and congressional circles, we're hearing negativity, but blessed people, it's all about us expressing positivity. You see, we live in a nation that's all about exploitation of the resources of so-called third world nations, and people in this time, we need peace, because positive energy always creates elevation. See, brothers and sisters out there, I want a piece of your peace and your peace and your peace and your peace, and if we bring all of our pieces together to the table, we don't need a piece called a gun or a weapon. So please, people, in this time and in this hour, please bring your peace and hold on to your peace.
Thank you so much, Manifest Ra.
You're welcome.
poet, peace activist, and spiritual healer Manifest Ra. Finally tonight, Los Angeles was the site of fierce protest after 700 Arab and South Asian men were arrested early last month while appearing for what was supposed to be a routine report to the Immigration and Naturalization Service. Armando Gadinho from Pacifica Station KPFK in Los Angeles presents this report on a recent meeting of the Muslim Public Affairs Council where civil liberties were very much on the agenda.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم إن الله يأمركم أن تؤدوا الأمانات إلى أهلها وإذا حكمتم بين الناس أن
In December of 2002, the Muslim Public Affairs Council, MPAC, held its annual convention in the city of Long Beach, California. American Muslims standing up for freedom and security held a series of workshops and seminars addressing the current state of the Muslim American and immigrant communities in America. Among these workshops included a discussion on civil liberties. Soon after the conference, the offices of MPAC received a call from the Department of Justice with a critical view of what the government labeled a lack of representation of the government's position on the issue of civil liberties and, in particular, the United States Patriot Act. As a result, MPAC organized a public forum at the Islamic Center of Southern California, sponsored by the American Muslim Political Coordination Council, AMPCC. In attendance, special guest George Cordona, representative of the United States Attorney's Office, and David Cole, Georgetown University Law School professor. It became a much-anticipated debate that filled the aisles of the Islamic Center, many of which were present to hear what the government had to say about the United States Patriot Act.
Much of what I'm going to be talking about tonight addresses new legislation, the USA Patriot Act. Much of that new legislation and some of the programs that have been implemented in part as a result of that legislation are currently the subject of pending litigation, both in this district and in other districts against the country in litigation to which the United States is a party. As a result, I may be limited in what I say. Moreover, with respect to what I do say, I have to give this following necessary disclaimer, which is a standard part of a talk by a government lawyer. Though I work for the federal government, nothing that I say here tonight can or should be taken as and may not be used or relied upon in any way, including in particular in any proceeding or litigation, as setting forth an official or unofficial position of my office, the Department of Justice, or the United States government.
Yes, ladies and gentlemen, for those of you who did not hear it, here it is once again.
Though I work for the federal government, nothing that I say here tonight can or should be taken as and may not be used or relied upon in any way, including in particular in any proceeding or litigation, as setting forth an official or unofficial position of my office, the Department of Justice, or the United States government.
The seemingly unofficial representative of the United States government went on to present the unofficial position on the United States Patriot Act.
The policy of the United States is made, and in particular in litigation, is made by the president, and in litigation is controlled by the Solicitor General's office and the Attorney General. I am not authorized to speak for them in terms of policy matters. What I can do is discuss what the law is and discuss some of the reasons why I believe there are perhaps some issues with it, perhaps not, and that's what I intend to talk about tonight. Our Constitution is premised, and civil liberties in the country are premised on a set of checks and balances that extends not only within the government, but also outside the government and to actions by individuals. So when the legislature passes a statute, they have an obligation to uphold constitutional civil liberties. And legislators, in fact, take an oath to that effect. When the executive acts to enforce a statute, they have an obligation to maintain constitutional civil liberties. And indeed, every member of the executive branch takes an oath to that effect. The judiciary has the role in our system of reviewing actions by the legislature and the executive. And they review them to determine and are the ultimate arbiter of whether, in fact, those actions have complied with the Constitution. Outside the government, lawyers, public interest groups, individual plaintiffs all work to trigger judicial review and to put in front of the courts the issues that will allow them to make determinations as to whether the actions comply with civil liberties. Ultimately, those groups also play a role in bringing public pressure to bear on the political branches, the legislature and the executive, political pressure to change rules that the public decides they don't want. And ultimately, individual voters play a crucial role in protecting civil rights to the extent that the political branches take actions that individual voters don't like. The ultimate solution is for voters to vote those people out of office and to put into office people who will take actions that they agree with.
The United States Attorney's Office Representative George Cardona went on to address the question of the protection of civil liberties in a time when the United States government requires a level of secrecy. In fact, he went on to say, quote, an official quote, how do we protect civil liberties in a context where the government is asserting a need to take action that requires secrecy and that are subject to only a limited public scrutiny, end quote. And this is what he had to say.
There is adequate checks and balances to protect civil liberties. And there are, I'll suggest, a number of methods that reflect efforts to maintain those checks and balances. And I think as I go through and discuss some of the provisions of the Patriot Act, hopefully I will illustrate how some of those provisions are there. So what are some of those? One is to maintain a high-level accountability. In other words, to ensure that there is an identifiable person within the government who is responsible for the actions, the question that this lady posed before. And one of the things that you'll see in many of the provisions in the Patriot Act that pertain to, for example, FISA, Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act surveillance, is that they require a specific certification by designated high-level officials. In many instances, the Attorney General himself. In other instances, a high-ranking official within the Department of Justice. Now, this may provide little comfort to those who disagree with what the Attorney General or the other person is doing, but at the least, they force that person to assume responsibility for that action. And by identifying the person who is responsible for that action, it subjects that person to, in essence, public pressure, and ultimately, to the extent a disagreement with that official's actions is there, voting the party or the people who are in charge of that official out of office. That's one mechanism. Second, reporting requirements to Congress. Many of the provisions in the USA Patriot Act require that semiannual or annual or periodic reports be provided by the executive who takes certain actions to Congress. Again, this provides a mechanism where one branch, the legislative, serves as a check on the executive by requiring the executive to report what they're doing. Third, sunset provisions, one of the items that was mentioned. Many of the provisions of the Patriot Act that pertain to surveillance, to wiretaps and searches that can be performed, have sunset provisions. In other words, Congress has passed them, but it says these provisions will automatically expire at the end of a fixed time period unless we take further action to put them back in place. So in essence, Congress has said, we're going to try these out. If we decide they're not working, if the public doesn't agree with them, they will automatically expire. We, Congress, will have to take action again to cause them to remain in place. That's another way. And finally, preservation of some level of judicial review. Most of the procedures that are set out maintain some level, or at least do not preclude, some level of judicial review. That judicial review does in some instances involve decisions that are based on secret information, classified information. There are provisions in a number of the Patriot Act sections and in other statutes that allow actions to be taken either by courts or by the executive based on classified information. But in many instances, even where that is allowed, there is still judicial review. So even if the executive takes action based on classified information, there are still provisions that allow the person affected by that action to then go to a court and say, I want this reviewed. And the court then reviews, the court has access to that classified information and can also consider it in conducting the review. So that's yet another mechanism, preserving judicial review.
After the official and unofficial comments by the federal government's lawyer, David Cole addressed those in attendance by addressing the issues of freedom and giving up some of these important liberties in response to the Bush administration's war on terrorism.
I think that there's a couple things upon which George and I will agree, at least two. One is that the attacks of September 11th were unspeakable. Really showed that that human beings are willing to go to depths of uh, of uh, of cruelty and of indecency that I think most of us thought people wouldn't go to. And I think in light of that, all of us feel more vulnerable. All of us feel more scared. And all of us want to be more secure. And so there have been many, many comments about in the wake of September 11th about how we have to give up some liberty in order to achieve security. But my criticism about that approach is that we have not, now I'm speaking of we, George and I, the white, Caucasian, American community, have not had to make that choice. We haven't had to choose which of our liberties we're willing to trade off for some gain in security that the government tells us it's getting us, but won't show us the figures to prove that, in fact, we're more secure. Rather, the trade-off has been, we will trade off your liberties for our security. That's been the trade-off. The trade-off has been that we will impose on foreign nationals, and specifically and particularly foreign nationals from Arab and Muslim countries, the government's word is from countries where Al-Qaeda support exists, that means Arabs and Muslims, we will trade off their liberties for our security.
The Georgetown University professor went on to describe some of the civil liberties violations conducted after 9/11 under John Ashcroft's mass preventive detention strategy.
We know that John Ashcroft continues to tell his U.S. attorneys to use every law he can to lock up suspected terrorists and keep them off the street. And we know that at this point, when I think that a conservative estimate would say 2,000 people arrested, zero have been charged with the crime of September 11th. The only person charged is Zacharias Moussaoui, and he was picked up before this dragnet began. And only four people arrested in a preventive detention campaign have been charged with any terrorist-related crime whatsoever, and none of them have been convicted. Four. Four out of 2,000. That's a pretty bad batting average. And it's not just that they haven't been charged with terrorism. The vast, vast majority of these individuals have been affirmatively cleared by the FBI of any connection to terrorism. The policy has been to lock people up, then investigate.
Other representatives of the American Muslim community were in attendance at the forum. Aga Saeed, member of the American Muslim Alliance and professor of Pan-African Studies at the University of Berkeley, was also in attendance. I had an opportunity to speak with Professor Saeed, and this is what he had to say about the event, media, and building bridges with other communities.
Today's event was part of a larger series of events that Muslim organizations and individuals are doing. This was under American Muslim Political Coordination Council, which is the largest umbrella organization of Muslim political organizations. And the purpose was to have dialogue, because I believe dialogue is the essence of civilization, to settle things non-violently, to settle things by persuasion, by understanding, by creating compromises, by creating and conveying concern, and by respecting each other's humanity. Dialogue is one way of respecting each other's humanity. So I think it is in the context of respecting each other's humanity and coming to common understanding, if not common conclusion, that we had arranged this dialogue, which had many dimensions. It was within the community, with other communities, with law enforcement agencies. So this is part of the effort to reach out in every direction.
As was clearly outlined by Professor David Cole from Georgetown University, the U.S. Patriot Act has some fundamental flaws in regards to the violation or the civil liberties of American and even non-American citizens. So then why is it that a document such as that, or a set of laws such as those, is able to pass in the United States Congress?
I think it's a combination of many factors, the primary factor initially being fear. Secondly is popular prejudice, lack of understanding, and lack of clear message from the administration as to how terrorism could be fought. So it is a combination of all of those things. But I want you to know that underlying it is a component of racism, and racism of both kinds, racism of fear and racism of contempt. And both of those are operational here.
The political socialization process that undergoes for the American mainstream public is a result of corporate media being in bed with government. What has been the process of legitimizing this war on terrorism on the American public on behalf of the corporate media?
But I think it is that people's insecurity has been exploited to manufacture consent around denial of civil rights and human rights to a small group. It is dividing the society into us and them, and then denying them of any rights. At the same time demanding, as President Bush did in his State of the Union address from the rest of the world, respect for human rights, which he said meant due process and equal justice. When people in this country cannot get due process and equal justice, America then is hardly in a position to preach to the world. So I think the net factor is manufacturing consent around denial of due process and equal justice to Muslim and Arabs, and have most people support it out of fear.
And one more question, Professor. How important is it in a time such as this, for the Muslim American community to develop relationships, long-lasting relationships with African American communities, Chicano American communities, and other communities that have been victims of this form of oppression for many, many years?
It is extremely important. It has happened long time ago. But again, Muslim community, as you know, is a very diverse and complex community. There are African Americans who are Muslims, or one-third of Muslims in this country are African Americans. A very large group are Latino Americans. These are our natural bridges to the communities you have named. We just have to strengthen those bridges.
Thank you.
Thank you, sir.
From the studios of KPFK in Los Angeles, for Pacifica's Peace Watch, this is Armando Gudiño.
Om Shanti, written by Dr. Michael Beckwith, who appeared on Peace Watch earlier this week, and his wife Ricky Byers on vocals.
Let there be peace in my mind. Let there be peace in the
Buyers. Pacifica's Peace Watch is produced in Washington, D.C. by Scott Gurian. Our editor is Lona Elias. Our engineer is Granger Helvey. We had production assistance from Adil Hamad of KPFA and Keith Shalijan. Thanks to Pete Karak at RadioForAll.net and Shane Rock at WebActive.com for web help. Copies of this program can be ordered from the Pacifica Radio Archives by visiting the website at PacificaArchives.org or by calling 1-800-735-0230. If you'd like to support this type of programming, we urge you to visit Pacifica.org and make a pledge through our secure online website, where you can send your donations to Pacifica Radio, 2390 Champlain Street Northwest, Washington, D.C., 20009. We'd love to hear your thoughts on the show. You can send us your feedback to peacewatch@pacifica.org. I'm Verne Avery Brown, the executive producer. Thank you for listening.